Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You don't know me and I don't know you. So let's cut to the chase. The name is Stu. And I'll be narrating this gig, so just sit tight. We might play all night.
The Ballad of a Black Rock Fan. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and in the next hour, we look at the evolving relationship between rock and race. And the band called A Sunny Day in Glasgow creates experimental pop music that echoes the music of the UK, but they're from Philly. They'll join us for a live performance. But first, the Tonys are this Sunday, and up for four awards is Passing Strange, the rock musical you're hearing now. It's a coming-of-age story dealing with issues like growing up a black rock fan. But while the protagonist, Stu, felt alienated for loving AC/DC and the Stones growing up, today's rock scene is awash with acts whose members are African-Americans, including bands like TV on the Radio, Gnarls Barkley, and Nerd. In a moment, we'll be joined by a legendary black guitarist and also by a female rocker for perhaps a different take. But we begin with Daily News music critic Jim Farber. His article, Rock is the New Black, is linked on our website. He joins us by phone. Jim, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Hi.
So there are a number of bands these days that are made up at least partially of black artists. I mentioned TV on the Radio and Gnarls Barkley, and if you look across the pond, groups like Block Party and others. Why is this happening now? Has anything materially changed over the past 20 years?
Well, technology has changed. You know, as you know, technology has changed everything. The internet has changed people's way of finding music, and therefore it's changed the whole kind of marketing of music as well. Basically, you know, kids now are hearing the sounds of something before they're seeing what they look like. You know, in the 80s, even in the 90s, MTV kind of defined a lot of how people discovered bands. And you saw people first. So if it was an issue like race, you were going to see that right away. If people are just using their ears and they're hearing things, you know, downloading them, they're not necessarily thinking about race.
Well, but if you go before the 80s, before MTV, mm-hmm. when people were listening, were being exposed to music over the radio, it was the same thing. You heard it before you ever saw the band, and yet radio had already begun segmenting things.
Well, that happened more, I think, in the 70s. In the 60s, you know, the point's been made a lot that it wasn't as segregated.
Yeah.
You know, that you did have things, ironically enough, more on pop radio very often, even in an underground radio, where everything was mixed up. I think we're getting back to that in some sense.
I know it's awfully soon to be asking this, but is there an Obama factor here?
Several people I talked to brought that up, you know. I mean, when I talked to Stu for the piece, one thing he said was that, that with Obama, you know, there also does seem to be this change in the culture, or at least there's now evidence of a change that must have been coming for some time.
Hmm. I wonder, though, Jim, how much of a change we're talking about. I mean, your article lists literally a handful of bands. We went to the South by Southwest Festival in March and saw very, very few black artists.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, what degree of change are you writing about here?
Well, I mean, you know, Gnarls Barkley is a big hit group, you know, you're talking about. So, I mean, there are some of these people who are quite significant. I think that a lot of people I'm writing about are in the vanguard, you know. They are people who are coming up. They are people who, you know, a lot of them are sort of cult artists, but we're moving into the post-pop phase anyway with the internet where everybody's a cult artist. There are not that many pop stars left.
Yeah. We're speaking with Jim Farber. He's music critic of the New York Daily News. His article, Rock is the New Black, is on the website, the Soundcheck page, WNYC.org. This is one of the bands that Jim writes about. This is the group TV on the Radio and their hit song, which actually did crack the top 40, called Wolf Like Me.
Yeah.
The band is TV on the Radio, fronted by a couple of African-American musicians. Wolf Like Me was their hit song off their 2006 release. Now we're talking about the question of rock and race. Jim Farber, music critic of the New York Daily News, wrote the article Rock is the New Black, and I'm joined now by Vernon Reed, guitarist formerly with the band Living Color, and
currently co-founder
of the Black Rock Coalition, which is dedicated to the development, exposure, acceptance of black rock musicians. Vernon, do you agree with Jim's article, you know, the suggestion that there is a change in the air?
Well, it's been an ongoing issue for a really, really long time, and I often feel like there's almost a parallel a secret history of rock, which is kind of parallel to the kind of accepted notions of the development of rock and roll music on a level, you know.
When you say like a secret history, do you mean something that developed in parallel the way the Negro Leagues developed ball players in parallel to, you know, the quote-unquote major leagues in the early part of the 20th century?
Well, something like that. It took a long time for, say, a band like Parliament Funkadelic to be recognized as a rock and roll band. The Isley Brothers are always listed as an R&B band, but, you know, they had a lot of popular music in the 70s that were essentially rock records.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think a band like Gnarls Barkley or TV on the Radio could have had the success they're having now 25 years ago?
Probably not, because things do change over time. Things do change over time, but it's been a... when I look at the community of rock and roll musicians of color, black rock, whatever you want to call it, I mean, it's so diverse, and it's been that way for a really long time, and there are pockets where... times where a band or an artist will be recognized, and for each one that's recognized, there are scads, you know, there are scores of others that should be recognized that aren't really recognized as well.
Yeah. Now, do you agree that it's the technology currently is driving at least a part of this trend?
Technology is one part of it, but I think that there's a restlessness among artists. There's always been this restlessness about who makes the definition of what black is and what black isn't,
what
rock is and what rock isn't as well. You know, I mean, that's been part of an ongoing debate and, frankly, an ongoing struggle.
All right, and it's a debate that can continue on the Soundcheck page of our website. You can leave a comment at WNYC.org. Are you an African-American who feels perhaps that, you know, rock music was not, quote-unquote, your music? Does it matter to you, you know, the sort of the borders between R&B and soul and funk and rock? I mean, there's a number of ways you can take this conversation. It's on the Soundcheck page of our website, WNYC.org. You can check out my blog. We're speaking so far with Jim Farber of the New York Daily News and with guitarist Vernon Reed, composer and founder of the Black Rock Coalition. Jim mentioned, I think, Jim, it's in your article, you mentioned the video for Living Color's big hit, Cult of Personality, right?
Well, actually, with someone else talking about that, yeah, and about, you know, how the group really was not shown, you know, in the early parts of it, because they were sort of always trying to, like, hide the band. Vernon can obviously talk more about that, but I guess what I want to sort of add to what Vernon was saying is a lot of this, what I'm talking about, is kind of media perception. When Living Color came out, you know, it was the media was talking about, you know, black rock band constantly. The difference that I see is, you know, nobody talks about the race of TV on the Radio or NERD or Lightspeed Champion or Gnarls Barkley. People just don't talk about it, you know, and that shows some change, I think, certainly from Vernon's time.
Vernon, tell me a little bit about what your experience was with the making of that video. I mean, you guys won the Grammy for Best Hard Rock Performance in '88. The song was a big hit. The record went gold. And yet there did seem to be this attempt by your record company to hide the band.
You know, I would say it's a funny thing because we're mentioning about Barack Obama, and it was 20 years ago that Vivid came out. And I remember when the band was coming up, I mean, it was the consensus was that we weren't going to make it, that it was highly unlikely that we were going to make it. And the first video that came out was Middleman, actually. And Middleman showed the band but didn't show the band up front. Actually, Cult of Personality was kind of groundbreaking because it really does feature the band quite a bit. And when we did the record, it was very much like a walk in space. We didn't know what was going to happen, and all different events just aligned for what seemed improbable to be inevitable. And you know, that's why I say to people, you know, when Barack Obama is elected president, because I feel so many echoes of the same thing. It was like, it's not going to happen. You're not going to get signed. They're not going to put the record out. If the record comes out, the record's not going to do well. And at every stage, we saw those very predictions.
So what was improbable became inevitable.
Exactly.
All right, let's hear a little bit. The band is Living Color, and this was their hit Cult of Personality platinum record back in 1988. Living Color, Cult of Personality from 1988. Vernon Reed, the guitarist, with me here in the studio. We've got Jim Farber, music critic of the New York Daily News, on the line. His article, Rock is the New Black, is linked to our website, wnyc.org. Taking a look at some of the comments that are coming in, Vernon, there's one here that says, go Vernon Reed, you kick ass. but there's also, you know, here's Perry writing, I grew up listening to R&B and soul music, but never Hendrix. In the past 2 weeks, I've watched 2 documentaries on Hendrix and purchased 2 CDs. I've also purchased music with a funk rock feel, early P-Funk, Eddie Hazel, the Isley Brothers, Vernon, some of the bands you were mentioning. Perry concludes by asking, how did some of us, black folks in parentheses, turn our backs on the roots of rock music? There, I mean, rock music came out of the African-American
exactly.
community.
Well,
how did it become a white thing?
I think it's, it starts with a lot of different things. When the rock movement first happened, I mean, it was a very, very underground and very dangerous movement, you know, because a lot of the songs in rock, or certainly in early rock and roll, very sexually charged, and you know, we were living in a segregated country, and the beginning of people like Bill Haley and the Comets, Elvis Presley, when white artists started to come into it, there was a shift in the attitude towards the music and towards the personalities. I mean, it was a lot safer and easier to identify with.
And Jim, I want you to jump in here too, because I mean, I'm sure you can give us some of the history of this as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you know, I mean, everyone knows that, or everyone should know, obviously, that it was started by African Americans. But you know, some of the people I talk to, and I've sort of observed this as well, express the fact that a lot of black audiences, once they feel that something has been co-opted by white audiences, they lose interest in it and say, like, well, you know, we want to develop something new, you know, and kind of move on from there and feel that it's sort of been stolen.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people, I think, sort of just like give up on it.
Let me ask you something else, Jim. I mean, I mentioned Block Party before over in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Bands like The Heavy, The Noisettes, mm-hmm. Block Party, mixed race bands, mm-hmm. Africa. You can't call them African Americans because they're not American.
Right.
Black English singers fronting these bands. Are they a little ahead of us in that regard?
I think so. You know, in, not just in England, but I mean in Europe as well. Obviously, I think they're definitely ahead.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Actually, we can hear a little bit of music from Passing Strange because that deals explicitly with Stu's experience of growing up as someone who loved rock music, but then having to go to Europe, actually, to Amsterdam and to Berlin. And actually, we have a clip of Stu from our sister program, Studio 360, in which he talks a little bit about this.
You know, there was this sort of like strange idea on a lot of white people and black people seemed to think that there was something strange about a black person or a group of black guys playing rock music. And we would always look around like and go, okay, so there's a guy, Jimi Hendrix, I guess he doesn't count. And then there's a guy, Chuck Berry, he doesn't count either. You know, and I thought we kind of co-invented this music with you white people.
So that's Stu. Vernon, you know, at some point did, as one of our listeners suggested, did the black community turn its back on rock for whatever reason?
You know, one of the things that I think is irksome and galling, I think everyone accepted that Elvis Presley was a great artist. But it was when Elvis was declared the king of rock and roll. And it was kind of like, well, how did he become the king and when
who crowned him
and don't we live in a democracy and aren't you supposed to vote on these things and you know and
No, Vern, that's the whole thing with kings. You don't vote for a king. Come on.
It's one of the things that that's gone now too. And it's so funny. I think of the exchange, in fact, that what has happened between musics and different peoples is that there's been this exchange. Where it breaks down is who controls the means of production and who controls the means of publicizing and who controls the media of it. That's where the breakdown is between the musicians. I've been to Sun Studios and, it's an honor to be in that room with so many great musicians. Like, there's a photograph. I've never seen. It's of B.B. King and Elvis Presley together. And it's so clear that they're friends. I mean, there's such a clear affection between the two of them. And this is I was shocked that this is an amazing photograph. And it's
never seen that.
And it's never, and it's only there
In Sun Studios.
And it's that same thing.
All right, let's, we're talking about, the question of rock and race and, Jim Farber's article is called Rock is the New Black, but of course you do have to look historically at this, as one of our listeners writes. Two words. Jimi Hendrix, writes Kenneth. How is rock the new black? Well, we'll ask Jim Farber more about that, and we'll be joined by the singer Denelia Cotton as well. Vernon Reed is with me from the Black Rock Coalition and the band Living Color. Here's a little bit of music from Jimi Hendrix.
I can't get no relief. Drink my wine, plowman, dig my earth. None will level on the mine. Nobody of it is worth. Hey.
Still to come on Soundcheck. Denelia Cotton gives us her view of a post-race rock world, and later we'll hear some live music from this band. A sunny day in Glasgow. They're actually from Philadelphia, by the way. You're listening to Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer with hits like Crazy, and now this one, Going On, which you're hearing. The biracial duo known as Gnarls Barkley has been a hit in indie circles, but would this group, fronted by the big-boned CeeLo Green, have had as much success back in the days of MTV? Joining us to look at the evolving relationship between race and rock is Daily News music critic Jim Farber. Vernon Reed, the guitarist with Living Color and co-founder of the Black Rock Coalition. And now joining me is Denelia Cotton, singer and guitarist herself. Danelia, in the first part of the program, we heard that clip from Stu, the guitarist behind the musical Passing Strange, talking about how, as a black kid growing up listening to quote-unquote white rock music, he felt sort of cast adrift, alienated. What was your experience growing up and listening to rock music?
It was a very, very similar situation. But I grew up in an area where there was very few blacks. And so I sort of listened to what the other kids listened to. And I constantly reiterate the same statement in interviews, is that I was angry that I didn't look like everybody else. And here was this music that was like thrashing and loud. And it gave me some place to put all that aggression. And it just expressed kind of what I felt. And it moved me in a way. So it just was a fit.
Now, you grew up in a small town in New Jersey.
Yeah.
If you had been growing up in Trenton, New Jersey, do you think you would have had a different kind of musical experience?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So in terms of, there's a number of stereotypes that, you know, Vernon and Jim have been talking about already that just go to race. You also are a woman. Is that yet another hurdle still in the world of sort of classic rock?
Absolutely. I mean, there's I mean, in rock, there's far more black men, I guess, that have made their stamp. And for women, I mean, I'm not as educated about all the women. I mean, I know the women that sort of have affected me, like Nona Hendrix and Tina Turner. And I would say, even, I know this might be a stretch for some people, but Joan Armatrading. I just think that for us, it's a little bit harder, because it's classic. There's sexism in the world. It's, I mean, even in music, there's that too. So I think, yeah, I'm definitely fighting even that hump on top of everything else, which makes it a little bit difficult.
All right. Now, the big question we're talking about here, is rock the new black? Are you feeling there's a change? Are you experiencing any kind of change in the music world?
I think it's definitely, there's definitely more groups that are, you know, black, that are coming up and you know, doing the rock, you know, playing rock music. But I would like for it to be more. I mean, I think there's definitely more groups like TV on the Radio. And even my group, one of my players, he's very light-skinned, but he's, you know, three-quarters of my band is black. And
you guys are doing what you would term classic rock.
I mean, actually, this is like, yeah, it's not even where some of the groups like TV on the Radio and Gnarls Barkley are doing a little bit different. Yeah, we're going straight ahead, almost like Southern rock. And sometimes people really just say, "Whoa!"
So you guys opened for Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yeah,
what kind of experience was that?
A little scary. I prepared myself when I walked out, and I thought, you know, if something gets thrown at me, it's okay. But it was the night before they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, so the audience was just intense. And I walked out, and there were a few Confederate flags, and I was like, I'm going to survive. But it was awesome, because it's a band that I had grown up listening to, and I was, more than anything, just in awe of that. But by the end, you know, when I went out to sign CDs, I thought there'd be no one in line, and there was like 60 people that bought the CD. So at the end of the day, if you're being true to whatever it is you are, and it is truly your music, people will get it. They will get it.
Danelia Cotton, the song we're going to hear is called Testify. Music from my guest Danelia Cotton, Testify, from the album Rare Child. That really is kind of, has that kind of classic, you know, Q104 classic rock sound to it. I'm probably not supposed to say that sort of thing on this radio station, but anyway. So Danelia is with us. So is Vernon Reed, guitarist, Living Color, the Black Rock Coalition. Jim Farber of the Daily News, what is the role of hip-hop in all of this? And I realize you might take that one way, and I think I mean it in another. I'm not saying, did hip-hop siphon off black listeners? What I'm suggesting or asking is, the best DJs have always had a real keen awareness of rock, great licks, great beats from often obscure rock acts. Is that something that might be luring people who are interested in sound to kind of get back into that?
Well, I don't know. I think of it more broadly. It's not just the sound or some sounds that have been used. It's just the whole attitude of so much hip-hop has that, what we think of as that rock defiance. You know, I mean, certainly a lot of people could argue that Public Enemy were as much a rock band, you know, as a hip-hop band, a hip-hop group. I think they would feel that way. It didn't sound conventionally like it at all, but it certainly had that attitude.
Now, Danelia, when you began performing, did you feel a pressure to, you know, kind of move into what is accepted as a sort of black form of music, singing R&B or soul or doing hip-hop? Any of that?
Oh, definitely. And I think, you know, a lot of people, when I was approached by any record companies, you know, if you have certain vocal chops, they just assume, why wouldn't you want to? Which is sort of like, well, that's my choice to make. And why are you putting me in this pocket? So that's, you know, you definitely have to fight that. There's a lot of stereotyping still, I think, within industry.
Vernon, with the artists in the Black Rock Coalition, have you heard similar tales?
Well, it's funny because there's a kind of interesting relationship between hip hop and black rock. It's like, one of the early bands in the Black Rock Coalition is a band led by Bruce Mack, who was one of the presidents of the organization. He had a band called PBR Street Gang, and they were an early band that had a rapper, and that rapper was Guru from Gangstar. So, you know, the producer and artist, Mark Batson, you know, Mark Batson is the producer of Maroon 5. I mean, Mark Batson was a big part, him and his brother Scott were a big part of the you know, the first iteration of the Black Rock Coalition. And when you think about beats, I mean, really, DJs led the way, because, like, Walk This Way, it's funny, in the ghetto, you know, I mean, DJs used to work the Walk This Way intro, so it was a
based
known,
on the Aerosmith song.
It was a known, you know, so when Aerosmith and Run DMC did Walk This Way, many people were like, wow, and we were like, oh, you know, because the DJs have been working Big Beat and Walk This Way forever. So that was a known thing in a kind of proto-DJ hip-hop thing. So it was not a surprise to us when that came around. But there was, you know, there have been, you know, I was proud to play on the first Public Enemy record, Yo Bum Rush the Show. So there's been a relationship back and forth with hip-hop and rock and DJs and guitars.
So, Jim, you know, Vernon brings up the example of Aerosmith, Run DMC. That was kind of a post-race music. I mean, as we head into the future, is that what you're looking for?
Well, you know, this phrase post-race is a little bit weird. I mean, you know, I feel in a way like this.
I should say that it's not you, but Stu in your article who used that.
Yeah, I mean, the reason it's an interesting phrase. I'm just uncomfortable with it because it kind of implies that we're there now.
Yeah.
And well,
yeah.
This trend, I see this as a really, really positive trend. I mean, this is, to my mind, one of the most exciting things I've written about it in a long time. But, you know, you can't idealize it. Obviously, race is a huge issue. Mm-hmm. Racism is everywhere and in all of us. So it's not something that just vanishes. I think that what these groups are showing, though, is some change in society. You know, they are being seen differently. I mean, as I said, I mean, if you go through the last decades, if you're talking about black rock groups, like there was a group called Mother's Finest in the 70s, mm-hmm. with the Bus Boys in the 80s, and Dion Ferris, is Living Color. All these people are important, but at that time, you know, there was so much harping on their race. And
well, actually, Jim, there's a really, I'd like to leave the last word to Albert in Greenwich, Connecticut, because he's picking up exactly on the point point you just made. He writes, after I saw a Living Color show at the University of Miami back at the end of the 80s, I kept hearing things like, they were pretty good, but it was kind of weird seeing a bunch of black guys rocking out. I am black, and it really bummed me out after such an incredible sonic experience. Now, that's 20 years ago, but, you know, the question remains. How much progress have we made? How much is still to come? We've been talking about the relationship between rock and race. Jim Farber, his column in the New York Daily News is available on the Soundcheck page of our website. We've also had Danelia Cotton, who is performing at City Hall Park tomorrow as part of the J&R Music World Summerfest at 12 noon. You can hear her classic rock online as well. Danelia, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Vernon Reed, great to have you back here in the studio.
Guitar. Hey, man. Oh, yeah. I just want to mention, I'm going to play with Mass Swift at the Mass Swift, great violinist, at the Vision Fest tomorrow.
At the Vision Fest, great. Yeah. All right. And Jim Farber, thank you for once again joining us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you.
Still to come, live music from a band inspired by the so-called shoegaze sound. They're called A Sunny Day in Glasgow. And we want to hear from you on who should win the Tonys on Sunday, the music categories. Vote in our online poll. Go to the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org.
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.